From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Californians are getting ready to head to the polls tomorrow, days after a big shakeup in the Democratic primary race. Mayor Pete is out, as is the Golden State's Tom Steyer. And Joe Biden hopes to get a tailwind from his big win in South Carolina.
The decisions Democrats make all across America in the next few days will determine what this party stands for.
But not so fast. Frontrunner Bernie Sanders told thousands of fans in San Jose yesterday,
"Please do not forget Joe Biden voted for the war in Iraq."
We preview Super Tuesday. Join us next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
So tonight, I am making the difficult decision to suspend my campaign for the presidency. I will no longer seek to be the 2020 Democratic nominee for president, but I will do everything in my power to ensure that we have a new Democratic president come January.
That was South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg announcing last night that he was dropping out of the presidential race. California billionaire businessman Tom Steyer also left the race this weekend after Saturday's South Carolina primary. But among those still in it to win is a rejuvenated former Vice President Joe Biden, who handily won in South Carolina with 48% of the vote. Now, with California and 13 other states voting tomorrow on Super Tuesday, the remaining candidates, including Warren, Klobuchar, and Bloomberg, are seeking a surge in momentum and to chip away at Senator Bernie Sanders' lead in the polls. How are California voters feeling, and which candidate will Mayor Pete and Tom Steyer supporters get behind now? Here with me to discuss this deluge of Democratic primary news is Tyrone Beeson. Joins us by phone, reporter who covers the 2020 presidential election for the LA Times. And welcome to the program. Good to have you.
It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Also great to have Tim Miller, contributor to The Bulwark, former communications director for Jeb Bush, a member of the GOP, and also someone who is publicly opposed to President Trump. Tim Miller, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Also good to have Adisu DeMisi, who is Democratic strategist, former campaign manager for Cory Booker's 2020 presidential run and Gavin Newsom's run for governor. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Good to have all of you aboard. Tyrone Beeson, let me begin with you. Let's get the general picture here. These are tectonic changes in some ways. I mean, coming out of South Carolina with a win and momentum, and some say the wind at his back is Vice President Biden. We have essentially resignations from, as we heard earlier, Pete Buttigieg and rumors that he may be backing Biden, and also Tom Steyer. How's this going to shake out in California with Bernie Sanders pretty much very much in the lead?
Well, that's the big question. And I think that Biden needed that win in South Carolina, not just in terms of numbers, but the sigh of relief that I heard among the people in the room when he made his victory speech was sort of moved through me. And it brought Biden himself to tears, talking about all the things he's been through in his life. And you could feel that something is welling up in him. And people were cheering at the end of that speech because they saw an energy and a sort of focus in him that maybe they were waiting to see. Now, if he can take that that message and that passion and energy to California and make something happen in just a matter of a few days, it'd be pretty remarkable, because Bernie Sanders does enjoy wide popularity here, especially among the state's Latino voters, who make up about 40% of the state. So we'll see what happens on Super Tuesday. It's going to be a battle.
It is going to be a battle. And let me bring you into this, DeMisi, if I could. Adisu DeMisi here with us in studio, as I said. And let's get your take. I mean, particularly with the question of what is going to happen with Bloomberg still in the race.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the $500 million question in a lot of ways.
$650
million. $650 million. I'm a week late. But look, he's put a ton of money. I think I heard $75 million into this state alone. And his name recognition is up. His support obviously has grown with that. And I think the question now is Bloomberg has momentum. Biden has momentum coming out of South Carolina. Bloomberg has money. They're going to meet here tomorrow, and we're going to see if they cancel each other out or if one has a little bit more power. I think Biden certainly, as Tyrone said, gave a great speech on Saturday. I think he certainly is riding a little bit of a wave here, but a wave can only carry you so far 3 days later. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I do think Bloomberg's definitely a factor in this state.
And I also have a historical memory here, Tim Miller, of when Newt Gingrich won South Carolina. Suddenly, he had a lot of surge as a result. Romney won up, of course, the nomination. But one does think of history here. I'm also thinking about James Carville saying it's going to come down to Bernie or a brokered convention. How do you see it?
I don't know that Carville is quite right on that. I'm very bearish on the possibility of a broker convention. I don't know, Adisu has been in the rooms with the DNC more than me, so maybe he'll have a different view. But I just think this is the kind of thing that these days get worked out unless it becomes a very close to a coin flip. And my view is if Vice President Biden comes out of South Carolina with a surge, as you said, we've seen not just from Newt Gingrich in the past, but for many other candidates, South Carolina has been really a harbinger of the coming presidents more than any of the other early states. And he's able to carry that momentum. You'll see a quick consolidation. I think Bloomberg would be out of the race Wednesday. Klobuchar would be out of the race Wednesday, and so there wouldn't really be that many kind of wasted delegates. And then it becomes a two-man fight where one of them ends up carrying momentum and consolidating later into March and April between Biden and Bernie. So I think that's the state of play. With Bernie obviously a front runner right now, Biden the only real likely spoiler in my view, and a very, very minuscule chance of a brokered convention.
Just interested in finding out as a Republican what you thought of the attempt by Republicans in South Carolina to cross over the lines and vote for Bernie because they saw him as the best candidate to run against Trump. They didn't. I don't know how successful they were, but Biden was numbers were pretty impressive.
They weren't that successful, but there was some. I have a group called Center Action Now. Some of your listeners might have seen some ads here because we're running them that is trying to encourage anti-Trump Republicans like myself and center-right independents who want to support a Democratic nominee that they can get behind in November to participate in the process. And I think you saw a lot of success among those voters in South Carolina. If you look at the Charleston suburbs, a lot of people like me who are Mitt Romney voters that don't like Donald Trump turned out in big numbers in precincts along the coast there in South Carolina. They had huge upticks in turnout there. Similarly in Iowa in the Des Moines suburbs, that was the place where the turnouts were the highest on the backs of a lot of, again, former Republicans have voted for Democrats in the midterms. And so, I think that they are going to play maybe not a decisive role, but an interesting role in the primary coming up. And that, by the way, is the inverse of what the Trump folks are doing. And I actually have no respect at all for that. I think it goes against our democratic norms and institutions. And by the way, just from a practical matter, I don't know how you could have lived through 2016 and 2008 where Barack Obama and Donald Trump win and think, what I want to do in this primary is I want to take my time to go vote for somebody that I hate the most and give them a chance to actually win. And I think that is, a risk that the folks like Hugh Hewitt and Rush Limbaugh who are pushing for this are making and pushing Republicans to do that.
Tim Miller, again, is contributor to The Bulwark, former communications director for Jeb Bush. And again, Adisu Dimisi is Democratic strategist, former campaign manager for Cory Booker in 2020. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on Republicans. Some of the WAGs have the notion that Republicans are more apt to turn out to vote against Bernie than they would be to vote, against Biden. And that would make a difference in some really electoral strategy areas. But I'm also interested in finding out your thoughts about what I think we can describe as the sense of Bernie being the standard bearer for the Democratic Party. A lot of people are saying revolution for the Democratic Party, a democratic socialist for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, I think Bernie has yet to win 50% of the vote or even close to it in any state. Biden got close to 50% in South Carolina on Saturday. And I do think Bernie represents a significant constituency within the Democratic Party, but I don't think it's a majority of the Democratic Party, at least not yet. That said, the rules of our convention and the rules of our presidential delegate selection allow for somebody to win a lot of delegates with less than a majority of votes. And so I don't believe that Bernie Sanders' ideology represents the majority of the Democratic Party, but it may end up winning the day just because those are the rules and those are the rules we all agree to on the front end of this.
I thought that the primary was rigged against Bernie. This doesn't make any sense. You're telling me that the process is actually helping him.
It turns out it is. It turns out it is. And Sanders folks were very involved in the writing of the rules coming out of 2016 and de-emphasizing superdelegates, making sure they don't vote on the first ballot and so forth. forth. And so I don't think that Sanders is the majority of the Democratic Party yet. I think if he's the nominee, more people will likely line up behind him, even folks who probably disagree with some of his core beliefs, because the threat of Donald Trump is just too great for all of us. But that's what 8 months more of a campaign are going to prove.
Let me go back to Tyrone Beeson. Again, Tyrone Beeson is a reporter who covering the 2020 presidential election, actually for the L.A. Times, and actually did some driving up and down Route 33 through California and discovered some very different views in the inland part of California. But for the most part, we keep hearing that California is Sanders country.
Well, it depends on what side of the road you're on and at what end, but I didn't find that to be the case. California is interesting, and I'm a newcomer here. I just moved to California last year, so I took this trip to introduce myself to different parts of California, right? And what I found was that there are certain core beliefs that unite everybody, left, right, and center in California. Basic decency, an idea that we're all one country. But people there view issues like climate and the economy, job creation in a very different sort of way. There are private prisons there. There are fields of oil rigs, orchards that go on for days. And so people have a different relationship to California than we might on this side of the mountains and closer to the coast. And I think it's important for us to realize that. It may seem as if Bernie Sanders sort of owns California right now. I didn't meet a single person who said a thing about him. Actually, and I drove through Trump country where it was quite obvious that these folks would never vote for a Democrat necessarily, even though they do want some way for people to talk across party lines. So we maybe need to pan out a little bit, as I did when I was coming over a 5,000-foot mountain pass, and to kind of see California in its full complexity. It's much different than what it might seem when we look at a poll result showing one candidate ahead of another.
Yeah, there are many Californias, some would argue. There are certainly two when you think of the inland and the coastal sides of things. Just wondering, though, Tyrone Beeson, I want to get your thoughts about something else here, and that is these NPP voters, these non-declared voters. Bernie Sanders is urging them to take a Democratic ballot and to vote. Otherwise, they can't vote.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But, you know, here in the West, and I'm learning this more in California than when I lived in Seattle, actually, is that people want to go their own way and they don't like being told how to vote and how to look at the world around them. So these folks are independent kind of to the core, and maybe they'll take the advice, maybe they won't. I can't predict that. But there's a really interesting sort of independent spirit that moves through California, regardless of party affiliation.
And can you talk a little bit about the 15% threshold and what you see happening here in the California primary and on Super Tuesday generally with that?
Well, it'll be, again, kind of interesting. And if Bernie does really well, then this is kind of then he can make the case, I think, as someone said before, that maybe he's the standard bearer for this huge block of the party. But I'm not quite sure what the strategy is for Biden and some of the other folks to get there. One of the things I heard in South Carolina all week last week was a lack of a strategy among these candidates to consolidate support and to move themselves forward and then to beat Donald Trump, whoever it is, in November. So that's to be seen.
Well, it's pretty clear, and I think, Adisa Demisi, I'm going to go over you with this, that Bernie Sanders has more passionate supporters, probably better organization, better infrastructure than certainly Joe Biden. In fact, talking about retooling today, the Biden campaign out of South Carolina, the fact of the matter is that this gives him a big advantage, and he has a big advantage here in California because of Latino voters.
Yeah, you know, Bernie's base, I would say, are young voters, progressives, sort of the left flank of our party, and Latinos. And that is it's probably not a majority of the Democratic Party in any state, and not here in California either, but it is big enough to win. And I think he's in a strong position to come in first place here. I think the question you posed to Tyrone is the core question, which is who and how many candidates are going to cross 15% tomorrow night. If Bernie Sanders is the only candidate who crosses the 15% delegate threshold tomorrow, he's going to collect all 144 delegates that are allocated statewide, and that probably puts him in an extraordinarily strong position going forward. If Joe Biden makes it to 15, if Elizabeth Warren makes it to 15, if Mike Bloomberg or all three of them make it to 15%, suddenly you're splitting up those delegates four ways. And his victory, while I think he will likely have one, will be have less of an impact on the delegate race. And so a lot of the decisions that a lot of people, myself included, are making over the next couple of days about who to vote for amongst the top four candidates are going to have massive effects on the race going forward and in Milwaukee.
Can I chime in on people making those decisions?
Sure.
And who they're going to vote for?
Please, Tim.
Because this 15% threshold does is important, and particularly in California. And it's particularly important for Joe Biden and for Elizabeth Warren if they want to continue to be viable. But I think for center-right voters like myself or center-left voters even who are looking at this field and are not comfortable with Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, like Mike Bloomberg does not have a path forward. He really doesn't. And his if you looked at the exit polling in South Carolina, he had a 66% unfavorable rating with South Carolina voters between his debate performances, between his past as a Republican, between stop and frisk, whatever.
He also had a 3-minute commercial last night about coronavirus, which we were talking about in the last hour. Certainly could have some effect.
I mean, I guess it could have some effect, but I think unfortunately, you know, $650 million. You'd think it could buy you a lot, but it really only buys you about 10%. It turns out, and I think
somebody said he spent all that money to go to his own roast in Nevada.
Yeah,
that's a good
I'm concerned that he's spending $650 million to nominate a Democratic socialist into the Democratic Party, and I don't know how he goes back to his friends, you know, his capitalist pals in New York, and says, hey, you know, I spent $750 million, and all I did was stop Joe Biden from being able to help Bernie Sanders. So the math just is not there for Mike Bloomberg. Even if he gets 15% tomorrow, he does not have a consolidation opportunity. Other voters do not like him. Voters on the left side of the party don't like him. Black voters, he's doing way worse than Joe Biden. So if you are a centrist voter deciding between Joe Biden and Mike Bloomberg tomorrow, there's really only one choice, and that's Joe Biden, because he's the only one that can win.
Probably a lot of people who voted for Bloomberg before the Nevada performance, by the way, because yeah. They could vote. Let me give out a number, because I know many of you would like to weigh in here with your questions and comments, and we'd like to hear from you. You can call us now at our toll-free number and be part of the program. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Number again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. And lots of emails coming in here. Amy wants to know, what happens with the leftover funds that a candidate has when they drop out of the race? Can you give us a picture on that, Tyrone Beeson?
Could you repeat the question? But
what happens to leftover funds when a candidate drops out of the race?
Leftover funds, yes. That's a good question. And it depends on where the funds are coming from, right? But my assumption is that those will go into to help pay down debts, I suppose. I know that Elizabeth Warren took out a sort of a line of credit in January. So it could go toward helping to cover whatever costs were incurred in the rest of the election. But I'll throw that to maybe someone else on the panel who might have some specifics on what happens.
Now, do you have some money left from Cory Booker's campaign?
Yeah, I know. I'm smiling over here because we did. You know, Senator Booker's up for re-election in New Jersey this year. So.
I'm available for lunch after that. For some of that extra.
Yeah, right. No, Tyrone's right. You know, the first thing you do is make sure you pay down any liabilities you have, obviously. One of the big things that we did on Cory's campaign is we ensured that we kept health care for our employees for another month. We paid severance to our employees for another pay period to make sure they could land on their feet. And then once you sort of get through all of that, whatever's left, you can just sit on. There are many folks who continue to have presidential campaign committees open or other committees open, and you sit on it and you can transfer it to a future committee or future race or what have you. But most presidential campaigns, let's be clear, the reason that they get out of the race is because they don't have anybody left over.
Take note of the fact that Mike Bloomberg has, I think, stopped the ads after Super Tuesday at this point. I believe that's the case. Yep. So that speaks volumes. But here's Rachel, who writes, I'm heartbroken. I supported Cory and Pete from the start, though I'm a strong feminist and would love to have a woman president. No one spoke to my sense of heart, soul, and vision the way they did. I've been supporting Pete alone for many months now, but now I'm moving to my second choice. Elizabeth's plans, vision, and energy are so needed, and while I winced, I also cheered at how she clobbered Bloomberg's sexism in the debate. Another listener, Susan, writes, I was a Pete supporter and contributor. I'd already voted by mail, so my vote won't count. Bernie's economics and divisiveness don't add up for me. Biden's age leads to a one-term lame duck perception, and his years of experience may actually hinder required new solutions, which worries me. So a lot of listeners weighing in, and we'll hear from more of you, of course. But let me go to a question to you, Tim Miller.
Yeah.
If Buttigieg actually, as some are speculating, puts his support behind Biden, how do you think that's going to have impact here in California?
I think regardless of what Pete did, he really made a selfless choice last night. I've unfortunately been on some losing presidential candidates. I've been in those rooms talking to I was with Jeb when he was deciding last time.
Low energy Jeb. Yeah,
that's rude. You know, you don't need to be copying Donald Trump's cruelty. But I was with him when we were
I'm
in the room.
Not copying it. I'm just calling attention to
I hear you. And Jeb, there's a lot of push and pull. A lot of people are telling you to stay in the race. There's a sense from your supporters they wish you'd stay. But sometimes cooler heads have to prevail. And I think that what Pete did by preventing what was coming on Tuesday, he had a good team. And I think they saw the data. They saw the writing on the wall that he was going to be finishing third or fourth or fifth across the country on Tuesday. And those votes could have been better used to somebody like, as your listeners who wrote in, Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden, who have a path forward. And so I think that helped preserve for Pete a lot of goodwill, an opportunity to partner with folks. If he decides to endorse Biden, I think that will, create even more goodwill for him with Joe Biden. And, I've been kind of surprised, frankly, by how many people have not been willing to come out and support somebody like Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren with kind of Bernie Sanders having the big lead out there. Because as Adisu pointed out, I wrote about this in the Bulwark last week, if Bernie does win in a big landslide tomorrow in California and nobody else gets 15%, and if Bernie wins Texas, this race is over tomorrow. And so, Pete making this decision to not try to stop that, but to affect that before the race was actually over, I think was an admirable choice.
The race could be even closer in Texas, though, we should mention.
Of course,
certainly,
yeah.
According to polls and what's running. But Adisu, let me go back to something a listener brought up here, and that is Elizabeth Warren's going after Bloomberg. There's some who say maybe she should have gone more after Trump, or maybe she should have gone more after Bernie Sanders, since they're in the same lane here.
Yeah, I think – well, first, I disagree about the lanes. I do think that there's a lot of overlap between Sanders and Warren supporters. But I actually think Warren's problem in this race for the last few months has actually been Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. Mm-hmm. It's been voters like the one who wrote in, who was a Pete supporter, who now is moving to Warren, is sort of the illustration of this. College-educated voters have always been her base, and they have been splitting their vote in some of these states.
Can I read you a quick tweet here? Because
yeah.
It's apropos. Eleanor says, what about Warren and Klobuchar joining forces? Why do you ignore women in the race? Also, what about VP opportunities for women? We cannot continue to have our country run by old white men, out of step with reality.
I think if Amy Klobuchar gets out of the race and Elizabeth Warren is the only woman left in the race, that's going to be a powerful thing going forward into March and April.
Was Amy Klobuchar's campaign hurt because of the Black Lives Matter episode that just occurred in Minnesota?
Absolutely. I think her one of her big challenges has been she hasn't been able to win over voters of color, and that certainly doesn't help.
Certainly that was what hurt Pete Buttigieg. Yeah,
she doesn't have a path forward. Her campaign's over, so she should be doing what Pete did.
All right, we'll hear from more of our listeners, and we'll find out what you're thinking and what you're asking when we return. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Tomorrow is Super Tuesday, and voters are heading to the polls. They already did in South Carolina, and the results were Vice President Biden was the victor. But what will happen here and what will happen tomorrow are still big questions in many people's minds. And there are also a lot of questions about voting itself tomorrow. I'm looking at a tweet from Laurel who says, if I voted for Pete already, will they count that vote? Will they still report the numbers for him? And getting a lot of questions along those lines for Californians who voted for any of the presidential candidates that dropped out before Tuesday's statewide election, you cannot vote again. There's no provision in California election law for a second chance once a ballot has been mailed or cast in person at a polling place or regional vote center. That's according to California Voter Foundation. Also, we're going to get a lot of questions about independent voters. Independent voters can still vote in tomorrow's Democratic presidential primary. They'll just have to take some extra steps. California's 5.1 million voters registered with no party preference can still vote in the Democratic presidential primary without having to re-register as Democrats. All that's required is that NPP voters request a Democratic crossover ballot wherever they vote, and that can be at a voting center, a polling place, or a county registrar's office. Independents who vote by mail should bring in their blank ballot in order to request one with the Democratic candidates. But, of course, Senator Sanders—
Can I just— since this is my group, can I add one other thing on this?
Yeah.
Republican, anti-Trump Republicans, by the way, I have friends who've asked me this. You can go tomorrow, change your registration to become a Democrat or an independent and vote tomorrow as well. You know, if you just haven't ever gotten around to changing your ballot, or a disaffected Republican, you know, or a registered Republican from you know, back in the McCain era or something, you can change your registration tomorrow and become a Democrat and vote.
Well, I'm just getting information from our guest, Adisa DeMisi, that Amy Klobuchar is dropping out of the presidential race. She's going to fly to Dallas tonight to join Biden and endorse him, presumably.
Wow.
I mean, that's right on the heels of California. That's
just what I just called for.
I was going to say, I guess Jim Miller's out here having influence over the Democratic primary, if that's true.
That's big,
though. That's huge. And I think it, you know, it goes to what Tim was saying before, what we were talking about before the break, is that this race always needed to consolidate. And Klobuchar didn't have a path to victory. She probably woke up and realized it and decided to make a decision. It's a pretty big deal.
We were also saying during the break that maybe a billionaire can't buy an election, as Elizabeth Warren and certainly Bernie Sanders have been saying, because if Bloomberg doesn't get the nomination and now Steyer's out, those are the two billionaires who were in it.
Yeah. I think it can help. It can only help. But that's frankly a positive reflection on our democracy that if Bloomberg isn't successful, and I'm not as bearish on it as Tim is, but if he's not successful,
it's impossible to be as bearish on it.
That's a fair point.
As negative on Bloomberg as possible.
That, you know, people are still going to make their decisions based on factors more than television advertising is probably a good thing for democracy to be.
Yeah, look, I think that Bloomberg has some uniquely negative candidate traits for the Democratic primary. Obviously, he was terrible in the debate and you know, he's out of step with the primary base on policy. You know, I think that had he put, say, $600 million behind, you know, into a DSU's super PAC over there, that Corey would probably still be standing today, or that Kamala Harris would. Had he spent any money going after Bernie Sanders, it's just mind-boggling to me that he spent $650 million and not a single cent criticizing Bernie Sanders. I think that could have had a difference. So, you know, it's not as if $650 million has no impact, but it's a good thing for a democracy that, you know, you can't be an unpopular plutocrat centrist and just buy your way to the presidency.
I want to bring our callers in, but Tyron Beeson, let me go back to you for a second here. One thing that I keep hearing about this 2020 election and the ascendancy of Bernie Sanders and likelihood in many people's minds that he will be the standard bearer for the Democratic Party is the name of George McGovern. I mean, I always go back to history, and George McGovern had an immense support from the left, but didn't get the voter turnout and certainly couldn't beat Nixon.
Yeah, and with Bernie Sanders, I have to say that one of his other opponents, who's actually not running, is people's grandmothers in South Carolina. I heard so many people who are of Bernie's age or who know someone who is say, this is what my grandma used to say, or this is how I look at it. Be wary of a guy who promises you the world and doesn't tell you how to pay for it. Everywhere I went in South Carolina, people who were elders in the black community who were trying to make this decision, right, about Bernie or Joe Biden, went back to sort of old school wisdom. And so I don't know how that translates. I know he's doing well among Latino voters out in the West, but among the folks in the South who have seen a lot of candidates come through churches and barbershops making promises to change their world, I feel like he just didn't resonate. And people again and again cited their grandma's wisdom in making that decision about Sanders. I thought it was really fascinating.
But Tyron, let me dovetail on that, and then we'll go to our callers here. How much of that support that Biden had to do not only with the endorsement he had, also from the most important black political figure in South Carolina, but also the connections he had in South Carolina, the friendships he had, what he built up as Obama's vice president? In other words, how much of that is going to translate here to California with black voters?
I think it's well, interestingly enough, in Los Angeles, the black community is very much rooted in the South. I mean, these folks moved west and many of them settled in Los Angeles. So there is a bit of a Southern black culture, even among African Americans in Southern California. But the people who remained in the South lived with all of the racism and the Confederate flags and the shooting at Mother Emanuel AME in 2015. They continued to absorb all of these sort of racial tensions that plague the country. And so they have a different relationship to politicians. Trust, relationships, long-standing connections mean a lot to the folks there, especially those who are, say, over 45, you know. And I think we can't dismiss that. Joe Biden has done that work. And it really means something that he stood not beside or above, but behind Barack Obama. That's how people describe it. He was this white man who stood behind the nation's first black president. And people looked dreamy when they said that to me. So that's a connection that really can't be broken and that none of the other candidates really can equal.
Tyrone Beeson is a reporter who covers the 2020 presidential election for the LA Times. And Virginia is our caller joining us. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning. I have a question about why the media is not covering any of the other candidates after only three states have basically voted. And we've got Super Tuesday tomorrow where 14 other states are involved. It's ridiculous to me that all these other candidates are being ignored and all it is Bernie or Biden now.
Thoughts on that, Tyrone Beeson? You're covering the election.
Well, that's a great point. But I have to say, again, I watched last week's debate in North Charleston in a room of African-American voters, and they want this race to narrow fast because what they see as the ultimate enemy is Donald Trump. And so I'm feeling just among the voters that I'm meeting a real sense that the Democratic Party needs to narrow this race and develop a plan rather quickly. To bring together a coalition that's big enough to win not just the popular vote, but the Electoral College in November. So I hear what you're saying to the caller, but the folks on the ground I'm talking to, I think, want this to happen and feel like it needs to happen right now.
And let me thank the caller and go right to another caller, and that's you. Neil, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, I'd like to know why there hasn't been any one-on-one polls as to which candidate can do the most or the least to defeat Donald Trump. How come we still don't have any real idea, do we, as to which of these candidates places best against Trump?
Tim Miller, you want to take that?
You know, the New York Times did a pretty in-depth look at the head-to-heads last October, so a little out of date now. It might have been in November. And they polled in the key states where Donald Trump, won the election in 2016, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. What that poll showed was that Biden had a narrow edge against Trump. Bernie had a narrow defeat against Trump, and Warren had a little bit larger defeat against Trump. So, again, just one poll, but they went very in-depth and I think did a good job. And basically what they found is that Biden had a better appeal around among voters like me, frankly, who had left the Republican Party and did slightly better as well with blue-collar white voters, and that was the difference.
Let me read a couple comments and then we'll go to more of your calls. Listener writes, I am a Bernie supporter even though I am not young, and I know that his policies will hurt me and my family economically. I trust that Bernie will have the intelligence to tamp down his more extreme policies, and I'm hoping that Warren becomes VP and brings a practical bent to Bernie's vision. At the top, you need an inspirational leader. There's nobody better than Bernie. But another listener says, since you are talking about Sanders' lead in California, don't underestimate Democrats who would rather vote Trump than Sanders. I despise Trump, but despise Sanders more. Sanders will make a bigger mess of the country and never resolve the strife in the Democratic Party. I'm voting for Trump if Biden does not get the nomination. Just two real polarized.
Please don't. that's my reaction to that. Please don't.
Well, we'll hear from another caller here. Let me go next to you. Dan, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. It's almost the same thing in reverse. The Republicans feel like everybody is aware that there's a 90% support among Republicans for Trump, but that's not evenly distributed throughout the country. In the most critical swing districts that really decide the election, his support among Republicans is only around 50 or 60%. And they will come out and vote for him if Sanders is the candidate. but they won't come out and vote at all if Biden is the candidate. And this comes from The Hill, the policy or the political wonky publication on, you know, online.
Disa, you want to address that? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Trump has a pretty, in the swing states certainly, pretty uniform support amongst Republicans. But first of all, I think a lot of former Republicans have basically left the party. Yeah. So they don't count anymore in terms of polling Republicans because they've just had enough with the Trump Republican Party. That said, if it's 90% or something like that, even if it's 93% of Republicans who are supporting Trump, you still have 7% of Republicans is a significant amount of people that can flip.
Yeah,
states.
I mean, here's the case for Biden in this instance, and I've written about this at the Bulwark. If you looked at the 2016 election, 2% of the electorate, which doesn't sound like a lot, voted for Mitt Romney and then didn't like Trump, and they voted for like Evan McMullen or Gary Johnson, or they're like my mother and wrote in the Pope. If those 2% of the people had instead been won all the way over to Hillary, or in this case to Biden, she would have won handily in the Electoral College. I mean, the race was that close. So, you shouldn't dismiss, how much of a difference this kind of thing can make on the margins.
I'm just wondering also, and let me go back to you on this, if I may, Adisu. There's still a lot of anger among Bernie supporters about what happened to him in the run against Hillary Clinton. And a lot of them have said they would not vote if Biden is the nominee. And they've gone on record in pretty large numbers saying that.
Yeah, I mean, it scares me both ways, honestly. It scares me to hear folks who would sit out, period, when the barbarians are at the gate. Trump is president. Mitch McConnell's running the Senate. We have the judiciary. We have for generations to worry about as folks who are on the left side of the spectrum. We have kids in cages and all these terrible things that people like me believe that Donald Trump is doing. And so but that said, I do think there is it's very important how the candidates conduct themselves, whoever the final candidates are over the course of these next months. That includes Bernie Sanders if he's the front runner, because without question, we have to come back together as a party. And we did not do a good enough job of that in 2016. And I worked for Senator Clinton at the time, or Secretary Clinton at the time. Certainly some of that is on her campaign. I think a lot of it is on whoever loses. If you think back to 2008, when Secretary Clinton was defeated by Barack Obama in a much closer race than 2016 was, she graciously got out of the race the day after the last primary, endorsed the president or Senator Obama at the time immediately, campaigned with him, and ended up in his cabinet. And that's the kind of, no matter how nasty and tough the race gets over the next few months, that's what we need in this party as Democrats to ultimately do the real work, which is beating Donald Trump in November.
And again, Adisu DeMisi is Democratic strategist, former campaign manager for Cory Booker's 2020 presidential run and Gavin Newsom's run for governor. Malcolm writes, there was a rumor circulating a few days ago that if selected as a front runner, Biden would choose Klobuchar as his running mate. We'll just let that stand as a rumor and we'll go to more of your calls. Melissa, join us.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am curious as to why, when Elizabeth Warren is polling second here in California for Super Tuesday and has been scoring quite well in other states, that she's just not getting the coverage that Biden and Bernie are getting. And as a candidate who has the ideas and has the plans that she's put out to support them and how they're going to work and is still progressive but not affiliated with the democratic socialism that people hold against Bernie, why is she not getting the attention that she deserves?
Well, Melissa, it's a good, I think, an important question, especially since the first partner, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, has already stated that she is behind Senator Warren. Tyrone Beeson, some light you can shed on this, perhaps?
I'd love to. That's a great question. And it's one of the things that drove me to Orangeburg, South Carolina last week to watch Warren deliver a speech at a historically black college, South Carolina State. Almost full auditorium, mostly young people, mostly African-American. And she brought along L.A. resident and pop star John Legend, and that helped. But Warren's speech itself had these students on their feet a couple of times, especially when she talked about debt for college debt forgiveness and investing money in historically black colleges and universities. And she talked about her own personal story, coming of age, and somehow as a as an older white woman was able to make a connection with these younger black folks. And many of them still were shopping around and didn't know who they were going to vote for. But there was a real energy in that room. And she described to these young people fighting against systems as an act of patriotism, fighting against injustice as an act of patriotism. And on a college campus, that just played really well. I mean, the crowd really loved that and hung on her every word. So it is kind of curious that she's not getting as much coverage, but also that it doesn't seem to be working in a way. But what I saw in that room was actually quite special.
Well, let me read a few comments before I go to more of your calls. And thank you, Melissa, for that call. Marv writes, I keep waiting for the centrists to admit that Sanders has so much support because he is speaking to what people on the lower end of the economic deal feel is very much needed. My position is the Democratic Party has dumped the middle to lower end folks and gone over to the millionaire billionaire side. Another listener tweets.
Can I just as a centrist who's being criticized there, I'd just like to chime in on that and say I 100% agree. I do not. Bernie is not my ideological ally, but he has just done a fantastic job of speaking to the economic anxieties in the country and being consistent about that and clear-eyed about it, not getting caught down whatever random news item is in the news every day. And if Joe Biden is going to beat him, and if Joe Biden is going to beat Trump, that's something that he's going to have to take from Bernie.
Well, Tim, a lot of people have made the analogy of the populist movement that Bernie has fervently accelerated to Trump and what he was able to do.
Yeah.
There are some analogs there,
for sure.
A number of them. Let me read another tweet here. This is from a listener who says, I told all my friends and family to wait until South Carolina votes before voting for a Democratic candidate. Been phone and text banking across the U.S. As a Joe Biden supporter, I think California will surprise you tomorrow. And Amy says, sadly, many of us Californians are only given vote-by-mail ballots. I have one, but always wait and turn it on voting day, but many people do not. Half an hour after my husband filled out his ballot in favor of Mayor Pete, he announced his suspension. Many of my friends shared with me that they voted for Pete, and he had already mailed their ballots.
Early voting is bad. Just going to throw that
disagree,
out there.
But this is one of the reasons why it can be problematic.
And more of your calls. Wynn joins us next. Wynn, welcome.
Thanks. You know, I hate to talk about money in an election because that's such an awful topic. But I didn't see a single Biden sign. I didn't get any mail from Biden. I didn't see any television ads for Biden. I don't think he had any money the month before Super Tuesday. What was he able to do in the states that are going to vote to get his name out there?
Well, it goes back to Jim Clyburn's remark that Biden's campaign people are going to have to retool, that the whole organization is going to have to retool. Tyrone Beeson, not seeing where you were driving around Route 33, I bet you didn't see many signs for Biden, did you?
Not one. But I also didn't see a Sanders sign or a Warren sign or a Klobuchar sign. I saw one Trump-Pence sign on a route that goes almost 300 miles. People talked a lot about America and coming together and shared values, but nobody mentioned Medicare for All or the war in Iraq vote. I mean, it's really interesting when you talk to real everyday people. They're coming in and out of this. So Biden, I think, might need to do a better job if he is somewhat successful here on Super Tuesday in all these states to make that connection. South Carolina, where he's super popular, I saw more Tulsi Gabbard and Tom Steyer signs, actually. So I'm not sure what's going on with that, but it's a legitimate issue.
I just say briefly, money matters in presidential politics for sure, getting to a certain level. Adisu can talk about that. But but the saturation point of a presidential campaign is not like a Senate race or a governor's race, where an extra $5 million makes that big of a difference once you're one of the top candidates. And it's because this is happening. We're talking about this on radio shows, on TV. They're talking about this on sports talk radio, too, I bet. And so people hear about the race. And so Biden can, I think, get a surge just based on the earned media and the conversation around it in a way that he couldn't in a Senate race or earlier on in a presidential primary. And so that would be the one bright light I would give him on that.
Well, Adisa, I want to hear what you think here, but I just have to dovetail with a quick question to you, and that is that Bloomberg brought up the Iraq war again. And I wonder if that's still having impact on voters.
I think everything
that Biden supported the Iraq War.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think especially once we get down, look, with now Mayor Pete out of the race, Senator Klobuchar getting out today, we're down to essentially four candidates. It's a lot easier to make pointed contrasts on a stage with four people than with seven or with 10. And on top of that, you know, one of the strategic challenges of a multi-candidate field is when you attack somebody, and a lot of these attacks are, you know, the Iraq War attack is a fair one. It's policy based. It's somebody's record. When you make an attack on somebody that may bring them down, you can't be sure that you're going to be the beneficiary of the of their loss. Now, you can be a little more clear. If I take this person down, I'm going to be the one to benefit. And so I think you're going to see. That's why this race, I think, is going to get a little more pointed, a little tougher here at the end here. But it's a totally fair attack. It's a fair thing to discuss. We need to vet every single one of these nominees, Sanders or potential nominees, Sanders, Bloomberg, Warren, and Biden, I think, are the last four. And if they're not taking on these tough questions and defending their record now, they certainly are going to have to do it against Trump and the Republican Party come the summer and the fall.
Criticism from a listener says, listening to your guests, I'm struck by how wrong pundits were in 2016 and blinded by their bias. They are missing the similarities between Trump and Sanders in terms of discounting the support Sanders has. Tim Miller, I think you were pretty much affirming that before.
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. I missed this with Trump in 2016 for certain. I think Sanders, like Trump, has a lot of support outside of the pockets of prosperity, outside of where a lot of the pundits live. And so, you know, they don't maybe see it in their day-to-day lives. But I do not discount that at all. I think Sanders absolutely could beat Trump. I think that
Biden's a
little
bit of a safer bet. Let me ask
you
a pointed question, though, if I may, Tim, because Sanders has support particularly among the millennials.
Yeah.
But millennial turnout has not
exactly been
encouraging for any
For
candidate.
Sanders to be successful, and he keeps talking about millennial turnout, and I get it. It's a good talking point. Hasn't borne out yet. But for Sanders to beat Donald Trump, it's not about turning out more millennials. It's about winning back blue-collar voters who left the Democratic Party because they didn't feel like the party was speaking to them, and they went to Donald Trump in 2016. Those voters gave Donald Trump the presidency. Sanders has to figure out how to get them back. I'm not certain they're gettable. I think that there are maybe easier paths to the presidency than that, but that's the only path.
Are they more gettable, so to speak, for Joe Biden? Do you think, Adisa?
I don't know, actually. I think Tim's point is completely right. I cannot stress this enough. I think Bernie Sanders can beat Donald Trump. I think Joe Biden can beat Donald Trump. I think Elizabeth Warren can beat Donald Trump. I think the paths are just different. The swing voter in a Bernie Trump race is probably blue collar workers in the Midwest. The swing voter in a Biden Trump race could be suburban voters in Georgia and Arizona and Phoenix and Atlanta, right? And so Warren is probably a totally different math entirely. And so it is just going to be a different race no matter who the nominee is. But I think Trump is extremely vulnerable. And anybody who says right now that they are sure that one candidate can or can't win, show me the receipts about how you predicted that Barack Obama was going to win Indiana and North Carolina in 2008. At this point, if you were, you know, we are terrible pundits at everybody, myself included, is terrible at predicting the future because God knows what's going to happen between now and November. So many things external and internal to the campaign.
It still seems to be moot whether Bernie Sanders actually said a woman cannot win. You know, he and Warren got into a really feisty argument
we'll
over
hear that.
That.
Probably hear that again on
well,
the stage.
Well, but that's going to probably come up again if, you know, if we're down to four here. Let me go to more of our callers and let's get Beth in here. Beth, you're on. Morning.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make the point that I worked in the tech industry for close to 25 years. I'm a well-educated voter, live in a zip code that's an affluent area, and I fully support Sanders because I think his platform really resonates with all the problems I've seen as an activist since Trump was elected, all the issues I've seen plaguing our government, the impact of money, the loss of focus on the middle class and the opportunities to move up and, you know, college debt. Those are things that, although they apply to the, you know, working class, they also have resonance, I think, for higher income folks, because in a matter of time, if the path we're on continues, all of us are going to be in those struggling with this issue. So that's the point I wanted to make.
And I thank you for that point, Beth. Good to hear from you. Appreciate your call. Here's Alex, who sort of going against what we just heard from you, Adisu, about any of these Democratic candidates beating Trump. Alex writes, I live in Berkeley. I'm surrounded by Warren and Sanders supporters. However, I'm terrified that they are too far left to win the important middle American voters we need to defeat Trump. I will forgive Bloomberg's sexism, stop and frisk, etc., if he has a chance of winning. None of the others remaining do, I'm afraid. I think Bloomberg is the only one Trump might be worried about facing.
I disagree with that. Mike Bloomberg went on that stage and he got absolutely annihilated by Elizabeth Warren. Imagine Mike Bloomberg going into a debate against Trump. I think Trump will just alpha dog him to death. I think Bloomberg will lose a lot of the Bernie Sanders supporters. Biden has a much better chance of consolidating them. I completely disagree with that.
Let me read another comment and go back to you, if I could, Tyrone Beeson. It's from a listener named Steven who says he wants to advocate for using ranked choice voting in the primaries. It makes so much sense in a field with a large number of candidates. It allows every voter to choose candidates they really support with their heart without hurting another candidate they also like. Tyrone Beeson, your thoughts?
Well, it's a great idea. I suppose if voting with heart were the only thing, but, you know, the candidates have made a point of rolling out long lists of policy issues that they want to rally their supporters behind. You know, it is interesting, the idea of voting with your heart without hurting somebody else, because that's something that I do hear. People are really on edge right now. This is an election where emotion actually does matter a lot. Certainly it did to the folks that I talked to in South Carolina. It mattered to folks up in Detroit and in Iowa. So that's kind of an intriguing notion, actually, for me as well.
This is just in. National Public Radio is reporting that Klobuchar has endorsed Biden. Make a difference in California, you think?
Yeah, I do. I think I don't think specifically, right? I don't think Amy Klobuchar has a ton of people who are hanging on her every word about who she was going to endorse. But I do think the fact that the news tonight, one day, the night before people go head to the polls tomorrow morning, is going to be talking about a former rival endorsing Joe Biden can only be beneficial to him going forward, getting him over that 15% threshold and maybe closer to Bernie, who I think still is the favorite in this state.
Well, there's also rumors going around, just rumors, that Bernie may be choosing Stacey Abrams. If that's the case, we've got a whole different ballgame. Well, it's been fascinating talking with all of you. I thank all of you for your participation this morning. Thanks to Tyrone Beeson of the LA Times, Tim Miller of The Bulwark, and Adisu Demisi, who is a Democratic strategist, former campaign manager for Cory Booker and Gavin Newsom's run for governor. Thank you all for being a part of the program. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.